and John Ritchie. Middays, 10 a.m. till 2 on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
All right, Eagles get the win, and they surely needed it. I mean, considering that 4-5 with New England and Seattle would have been a tough one. But so they get the win they needed, but unconvincing fashion for many. Third and fourth quarter struggles. Receivers dropping balls, and I think clearly the biggest negative of the day, Deshaun goes out and you know, presumably he's going to be out for a while here again. It's just our guess. Let's go to the phones, 888-729-9494. But I feel good, man. They got the win. They needed it. And I do think they're improving in a lot of ways and healthier. Let's go to Nate in North Philly. What's going on, Nate?
What's going on, guys?
Nate, hi.
Got a victory, Nate.
Hey, man. Yeah, win's a win. I wasn't too confident about it a couple weeks ago. We beat the Jets. And I know, Joe, you said the other Jets. After that win, you were feeling good, and, you know, and again, a win's a win. Yep. I agree. But afterwards, I called because I went to the game, and I'm like, I do have concerns because when we face solid teams, when we can't just give out, you know, abysmal play like that, we were going to get handled. And sure enough, we went to Minnesota, got whooped, went to Dallas and got whooped. So now I feel like we're kind of back in that same area. This time the Bears, and then we have to face two tough teams yet again.
Yep.
After an abysmal right. performance.
But, you know, like, but history will repeat itself. Yeah, but Nate, this team is what it is. They're only as good as the personnel that's on the field. We are not, especially with Deshaun Jackson out, whose skill set accentuates the abilities of those around him. Without Deshaun, we are not going to win these next two games. That's yeah. what we won this game, but it feels like such a huge major loss in the grand scheme of things.
Absolutely, and I think it's kind of tough because we I feel like we'll forever gauge the current team with the Super Bowl team, which was kind of an outlier. But I mean, the simple thing like this wide receiver's catching a ball. I mean, you can't do that. And granted, the Bears are a great defense, but I mean, if you can't do that just in simple games. You're not going to be able to outscore these teams if you can't outrun them. You can't, you know, like this thing has to be a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. And without Deshaun out there stretching the field, you didn't get Robbie Anderson because you believed in Deshaun. He's not going to be 100% for the rest of the season. I can guarantee you.
Didn't get Robbie Anderson. Didn't get anybody. What about the fact that Josh Gordon was sitting out there? No one, we didn't even put a waiver claim in on him. Josh Gordon got picked up by the freaking Seahawks. We're going to see Josh Gordon in 3 weeks. Or whatever that is. Yeah, 2 weeks.
It might be three.
No, you're right. Three weeks.
Right.
3 weeks.
Listen, the Gordon thing.
Like, you knew that Deshaun, you knew that it was possible that Deshaun would try to come back and have a setback. So, I don't know, give yourself a safety net. Why is it that we don't have any receiver who actually wants the ball thrown his way, who is counted upon to catch the ball, who's counted upon to get open. I can't stand watching Nelson Agholor play football anymore. Quite honest. I mean, Alshon or Nelson.
Yeah, it's rough.
Nelson Agholor no longer looks for the ball. He looks for the penalty. He's running downfield. He gets breathed on. He falls down and flops. Go catch the ball. Your job is not to convince the officials that you got interfered with. Your job is to go catch the ball no matter what happens around you. Go up and get it. And then if there's a penalty, there's a penalty. He's completely out of whack. This coaching staff needs to come down hard on these guys. They need to play. They need to, I don't know, bring guys up from the practice squad. Do something. This group stinks. And it is, we cannot win. We can't win. Let's bring Greg Ward up and play him and throw him the ball finally. I don't know what else to do. People are talking about Jordan Matthews. I said all along, I'm against bringing Jordan Matthews back. He's so not good. He can't play outside. He's so mediocre that he just has to use his size in the slot, and that's why he's a slot guy. Now, let's bring in another mediocre slot guy in Jordan Matthews because we just need someone
who wants
the ball. Someone who has the confidence that they will actually catch it and do something with it. Give us a spark.
Let's talk to Marcus in North Philadelphia. Yo, Marcus.
What's up, y'all?
Hi, Marcus.
John, I love listening to you, John, but you have been so negative lately. Before you respond, hear me out. When we played Buffalo, before we played Buffalo, everybody expected us to lose because they had a really good defense, and we demolished their defense. Before we played the Bears, everybody expected us to lose. The Bears' defense was so highly touted before we played them. Now that we got a win against those teams, those were mediocre quarterbacks that shouldn't be in the league and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, come on. Like, take the win. You only
can lose. I agree, Marcus.
John, you were in the league. You know, week by, you take it week by week. I just heard you say we're going to lose against the Patriots, then we're going to lose against Seattle. Patriots didn't look that good last night, John.
And that scares me more. Think about that. The Patriots, with 2 weeks of getting reamed by Bill Belichick, now we got to face them? That, don't get me started on that.
No, but listen, Marcus, I agree. I'm a negative Nancy.
Marcus
today.
And the child.
Both of you. I am overly...
Even the child's riled up with what you're saying, John.
I know. I'm overly negative. That's the way that I feel. My world is coming crashing down around me first and foremost, because I know that the way we won these last two games is we had a great balance of run and pass. And our offensive line did a good job.
Yeah, they did. The offensive line's
proven. Now what happens when everyone says, hey, we're going to take Zach Ertz away, and in order to do that, we can bracket him, but the guys who are bracketing him can be in the box.
Well,
they can double Zach Ertz and load the box up to stop the run all at the same time.
Yeah.
If you want to beat the Eagles, you take Zach Ertz away and you take the run game away. You can do that in one fell swoop.
All right, but
DeSean Jackson made it impossible to do that.
Listen, the DeSean loss hurts a lot. And again, Doug today at noon, it'll be interesting to see what he says. Justification behind playing him. What exactly happened? Was it a re-injury or just pain, or what's the deal? But I will say this, Ertz's best game of season yesterday. Terrific game did happen essentially without DeSean. I mean, DeSean played for a series. So I hear your theory, and it's been proven
and,
right
and
a lot this year.
You know what's going to happen? Teams are going to say, well, now we have to devote coverage to Zach Ertz.
But the Chicago Bears are pretty damn good defense.
But
Pagano's not an idiot. I'm
well
think,
suited
but,
to face Zach
I don't
Ertz
think
that
he was
accident.
They
yeah,
didn't.
I mean,
take him away the way that teams have schemed in the past, where you take a big, good cornerback and put him on there and then give him backup with a safety over the top. And also,
do you think Pagano messed up?
Well, no. I mean, yeah, he could have done things differently. I mean, for sure. Also, teams have been doing the thing where no matter where he is on the field, you're lining up a D end. Like there's a hit out on Zach Ertz where the D end, as he's rushing the quarterback, will get a chicken wing on Zach Ertz to knock him off his route. Hmm. Anyone who gets anywhere near Zach Ertz, it's a focus. You hit him. And the Bears didn't do that yesterday. They should have done that yesterday. Teams, Bill Belichick will do that with three guys
on
every play.
But it doesn't matter, John. When Zach Ertz faces Belichick, he just scores game-winning touchdowns. It's not a big deal. That's what he does against Belichick. Let's go to the phones. Talk to Ross in Huntington Valley. You know what I'm talking about, Ross. Oh.
Yeah.
Ross, you got to get off whatever you're on. Speakerphone, toilet phone. What are you on there? Yeah, Ross is just not ready to
Silent
go.
Silent phone.
We got a Hassan in South Philly. Yo, Hassan.
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's
Thanks
up, man?
Thanks for taking my call.
You got
Thanks
it.
For calling.
I'm kind of in between, and I'm more of a John, man, but you're kind of positive today. It's shocking.
Yeah. I kind of want to be more positive, but it's not the way I feel.
5-4, they're alive, Hassan. They really are.
And I feel kind of like both of you. On one end, as a fan, as a diehard fan, I'm happy that we won and we got we 5-4 and we got an opportunity, like, really to show our worth. If we're good enough, we win the games we need to win, and we get in the playoffs. If we're not, it's going to expose us. So we kind of like set the path up to show. Was not making no moves a good idea or not. But I kind of wanted to say two things.
Yep.
Three, well, I need people to stop blaming everything on Carson when you start to see that the receiver is not the same. Like, everybody keeps saying, oh, in 2017, or when Nick Foles was there, they just not making catches. And Wentz make bad throws here and there, but these guys, they progress. They're not as good as they was 2 years ago. They're 2 years older. Their body's a little more banged up. And they just not as good. And I feel like Doug, with the play calling, and, you know, we not, like somebody said earlier on Angelo's show, we not putting our foot on his neck. Like, we down there, and instead of him, and oh, yeah, him being stuck on his packages, and I feel like this will hurt us in some of the drought and slow play calling that we have at times, because he had made a mention that his package, when they adjusted their defense, it didn't go with his package. And I feel like if you see that they adjust to one thing, just change the package for that drive. And it's like he gets stuck on whatever his package and his play set for that drive is, and he won't change it no matter the defense, so either it's going to work or not. And, like, if you know you go for it on 3rd and 2 or 4th and 1, why not run the ball up the middle, get closer, and just try for the first down? And the last thing, sorry to be if I'm wrong.
No, go ahead.
The Malcolm Jenkins thing, like somebody also mentioned about him, you know, saying that he, if you notice, and I'm starting to think about what Scandrick said, he blew the same coverage, that same cross across the middle, he bite down like 3 or 4 games straight. And I'm starting to think, is he in his feelings about not getting a contract? Like, Wentz got a contract, he wasn't even on the Super Bowl team, and y'all don't want to give me a contract. Is he throwing, like, not giving full effort, or is he just pressing, like they said, too? Is he pressing to make a play so bad that it's costing us big plays in the end?
Well, it's a good question, Hassan. I tend to think it has nothing to do with the contract. I just think it's probably a mess up. But, John, what did you make of that? The long pass, Mills. Mills immediately kind of looked around kind of like, is there help here?
I thought it was on Malcolm.
I did, too.
It looked like it was 3 deep. Malcolm bit on the underneath stuff,
yeah,
and it went right where he was supposed to be. And I thought it was alarming how the lack of catch-up speed was so obvious. You know, like when he got caught peeking, he didn't have the ability to recover. And I've been looking all season long for, is Malcolm really taking a step back? Has he lost a step? Is he looking older? Because that's what some people were saying. I didn't believe it until I saw it. I saw it yesterday.
Interesting. Well, it makes some sense, does. 888-729-9494. Rodney McLeod on our show today at 1 o'clock, as he is every Monday after a game. Obviously, that's one of many plays we'll get to talk to Rodney about, you know, what did go on that play. But, yeah, it looked to me like a Malcolm play. All right, Twitter poll question of the day. It's brought to us by the casino at Delaware Park Sportsbook. Wagering on all pro sports in a comfortable atmosphere with great food. Online at DelawarePark.com. Lottery agent for the Delaware Lottery. Must be 21 to play. Today's question: do you feel better or worse about the Eagles after yesterday's game? Obviously, the good is they tack on a win, and some parts of the squad is improving. The bad is, I mean, as we know, it got really hairy in the fourth quarter, and Deshaun, I mean, you might just get nothing from him the whole rest of the year. Do you feel better or worse? You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. A, better, B, worse. Hop aboard the phone lines. Let's talk to John in Coatesville. What's up, John?
Hey, nothing much. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So, Joe, you see the glasses half full. John, you see the glasses half empty. And Jeffrey walked the glass because he dropped it.
Oh, look at you, John. Look at you making a funny right there on Alshon's expense. He's got to play better. Sure. I'll tell you this, man. Alshon's got to play better. He's one of the, I'd have to figure it out, but he's probably one of the 5 or 6 highest paid guys on the team.
What is the problem?
He's got to play better.
What is the deal? We know that he was disgruntled. We know that it's likely that he was talking to people about how disgruntled he was. But how is this manifesting itself on the field, like, it so obviously?
Yeah. Especially when it has nothing to do with age. I mean, the hands are the hands. I don't care if you run slower.
Well,
I mean,
hands are a crazy thing. It's just like focus dictates the hands. His focus has been elsewhere. Obviously, we've gathered that information, and it truly is affecting his ability to catch the football.
I do have a question for John. Last year, John, when Zach Gertz did his record-breaking year, Deshaun runs in the hill. We didn't have a deep threat. And Deshaun's not here most of the games this year, and Arts is non-existent. Like, what changed?
Good question. John, what do you make of that? Is it the way they're defending him?
I do think teams are making a concerted effort to take him away. Of course, teams were doing that last year, but it wasn't quite as concerted, I guess. I mean, now that he is really the only threat. Think about it. Besides the run game, Zach is it. So they can devote extra attention to him. And now that they've seen that it works and it can take him out of a game, that chipping him wherever you're going, that hitting him gets him off rhythm, that, people have, it's been demonstrated how to minimize him, and people now have that blueprint.
Can I just make a point, though, about
somewhat.
Can I just make a point on this Zach Ertz thing? Because I think conversation's gotten a little, I think it's gone a little too far here. Let me just say this. Zach Ertz last year had the most catches in the history of the National Football League as a tight end. It was an exceptional year. We know it was an exceptional year. Maybe they threw to him too much, as was some of the conversation. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But I know this. It was an all-time great year. I also know the next year is not likely to be an all-time great year.
These are progressions. I mean, like you throw to the open guy.
Zach Ertz.
That's the truth.
Zach Ertz is right on track
for the
kind of season he had prior to last year, like three or four different times.
Come on, man.
John, the Super
Bowl. Look at the stats.
I'm looking at his stats.
It's 75. At the midway point, he was on pace for what? How many? After eight games, he had, what, 37 catches?
Okay, well, now he's got 46. So in the Super Bowl year, it's 74. I mean, what's the major issue here? He never had 1,000 yards.
He had a game yesterday heading into yesterday's game, he had one touchdown on the year. He had 37 catches.
I understand that.
That is not close.
I'm not saying
to
that,
what.
Listen, the touchdowns are off. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, there have been plenty of years gone by when Zach Ertz has been a very solid contributor, including the Super Bowl year. I mean, Super Bowl year, he had 74 catches. He had 8 touchdowns, which is tremendous. He had 824 yards. Like, he had 824 yards. This year, he's got 527 yards. Is he that far off that? No. He could use some more touchdowns. I'm not saying that's not a little lagging, but people act like he's fallen off where he always was.
You
that's
can
just not
parse
accurate.
This however
it's
you
not,
want
it's
to parse it.
It's not accurate, John.
When you had 116 catches last year.
Yeah.
And then at the midway point, you have 37.
Yeah.
That's a major drop-off. When you had 8 touchdowns last year, and then at the midway point, you have 1, that's a major drop-off.
Yeah, but okay.
I mean, no matter how you cut it, the productivity is not how many yards you get.
Yeah, but
the productivity is whether you're making the big plays to help the team win.
Yeah, but it's not as far off as a lot of people. Like, when you say 37 catches to halfway point, okay, so he was on pace for 74. Is that bad? I mean,
no,
of
course not.
John,
not for a tight end, but it's bad compared to the standard that he set the year before.
But that's an unfair standard, in my opinion, to hold him to. That's ridiculous. It's the greatest of all time. I mean, when Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs in 1927, did people think he was going to hit 65 the next year? I mean, at some point, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Zach Ertz.
It's ridiculous to expect excellence from a guy who played excellent the year before.
But also part of this is maybe it was important to find other ways to get other guys involved to get more points for the team.
Did we get other guys involved to get more points for the team?
But that's other guys letting them down. I don't think it's Ertz letting them down. That's my point. Other guys aren't holding up their end of the bargain. I think they're trying to get the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're all aware of
that. So my point is there's a lot of people digging in on Zach Ertz, and I think it's unfair. That's just my opinion.
Well, Zach Ertz can only do what Zach Ertz can do. I mean, when they're taking you away, other guys have to step up. Just like when Fletcher Cox is double-teamed and triple-teamed, our defensive ends need to win on the outside. And more often than not, they have not been doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a team game. And the offense is nowhere close to where they need to be.
All right, 888-729-9494. Coming up, we'll go inside the numbers, who the coaching staff trusted yesterday with some playing time. Also, some Gabe Kapler news. We'll hit that as well. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie, 94 WIP.
I've lost 45 pounds with Nutrisystem so far, and I'm at the weight I want to be. And I know at this point all of my coworkers are sick of me talking about how good the Nutrisystem food is. But I'm doing it again anyway. And I wanted to show everyone here just how good the food is. So I spread the wealth a little and the good taste. I brought in a few samples. Everyone loves it because Nutrisystem offers the foods that you love. Pizza, burgers, chicken parm, ice cream, sandwiches, candy bars. It's unbelievable. And these meals are perfectly balanced to put your body in fat burning mode. Go to Nutrisystem.com/men right now. Click on the radio icon on the top right-hand corner of the page and use the promo code Richie to get $50 off. That's R-I-T-C-H-I-E. And you get a week of protein-packed shakes for free when you use that code. Do not put this off any longer. You owe it to yourself. Go to Nutrisystem.com/men right now. Click on the radio icon on the top right and use the promo code Richie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, to get started. Results vary. Offer restrictions apply. See website for details.
Show to camera, John Richie, 94WIP on a busy day. Chris Ben Simmons, the injury yesterday. Eagles football in the air, and Phillies baseball is the offseason now. The planning process for 2020 is certainly ongoing. And joining us right now on the Swartz-Cullerton guest line, if you're injured at work, get Justice. Call Swartz-Cullerton at 800-JUSTICE, the general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, Matt Klintak. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm great, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, Matt. Appreciate you carving out a few minutes here of your day to be on our show. Matt, a lot to discuss. Obviously, some look back and some look ahead. And let's start with Joe Girardi, really a widely acclaimed hire. What excites you with Joe Girardi as the Phillies manager?
Well, I can kind of answer that two ways. I mean, number one, just going through the interview process and talking to a lot of people that had known Joe throughout his time with the Yankees, the Marlins, and back in his playing days, you know, what stuck out was just how many people talked about what a great guy he is, what a great teammate he is, what a hard worker he is. Just a lot of the traits and characteristics that we would hope for in any employee, but certainly for the major league manager. That stuck out for sure. I will tell you, in the last couple of weeks, just since he's been on board, just having a chance to spend time with him more, sitting in meetings with him, going through interviews, et cetera, I've just been blown away. This guy's been awesome to work with. I'm just super excited. I think he's a great fit for our club and where we're trying to go. And, you know, he's already had an impact, and I expect that will continue for the next, few years,
yeah.
if not longer.
Well, Matt, the town loves him. That's clear out of the gate. You know, one of the things that we wonder, the manager-general manager relationship, does Girardi have full autonomy on all game day related decisions?
Yeah. I mean, but that's not a change from where we've been in the past. I've said that even dating back to when Pete McCannon was here. The major league manager has to have that autonomy, because in order for that person to have the credibility among the coaches, among the players, and frankly among the fans, he needs to be able to act the way he believes he should act in terms of writing out a lineup and bullpen management and everything else in between. So that Joe will absolutely have that, but again, that's not a departure from where we've been in the past.
Matt, I just got to ask, were you afraid you'd lose your job?
Not really. You know, it's, I think in the day you take this job, you know you're someday going to lose it. I think
That's
heard a lot of people
sure.
said that. So that's probably a given. But, no, you know, the funny thing was when we were going through, particularly those first couple weeks of October, and there was a lot of stuff swirling around, you know, rumors and this, that, and the other thing. I was probably the least affected by all of that, because I knew that I was talking to John Middleton and Andy McPhail every single day, multiple times, and meeting and talking about, you know, what we were going to do and planning, and if we do this, then what, and if we do that, then what, and like never once did I feel remotely cut out of the loop. If anything, I think I became closer with John than I ever was at any other point prior to that. So again, maybe I was, you know, maybe because, I don't know. I was sort of in the eye of the hurricane, I guess. In
sure.
Some ways, but
yeah.
But I never really felt that at all.
How aware were you of the anger that was swirling with the Phillies fan base?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's part of the job is understanding the, you know, sort of what's going on in the city and the way people respond to certain things. The one thing that I can tell you, and I've observed it both, you know, with the Phillies as we've been winning, certainly in the years before I got here, that 07-11 run, but also just watching the way, you know, the town has appreciated the Eagles in good times and the Sixers when they're on a run, and also those teams when they're going through bad funks. Like this team, this town, they just want to win, and I hate to boil it down to something that's just that simple.
Sure,
but it really is
yeah.
just that simple.
Yeah.
And if you win, people are happy, and if you don't, they're not. And I get that, because that's the way I am too.
Matt Klintak with us. That makes a lot of sense, Matt. Matt, the season obviously did not go as expected. 81-81. Do you feel? And there was some bad luck, And there's certainly a perception that there were some bad, you know, decisions that went into the creation of the roster. Do you feel that you learned some lessons that you'll apply as a GM moving forward? And if so, what were they?
Look, I think we're always learning. Everything we do, you know, is a learning experience to draw upon for the next decision. The best thing I can do is to go back and look at why we made the decisions that we made, and you know, what was the information we had at the time, and was there something we missed at the time, and you know, sometimes we'll go through that and we'll say, yeah, you know, we should have accounted for something differently. And there are other times that you say, you know what, if I had to make the same decision again, I would do it again because at the time, this is what we knew. Now, that doesn't mean it always works out. Like, for example, in this particular season, 2019, I've never been associated with a team. I don't know if I've seen a team externally that had as many injuries concentrated in one area, right? There have been teams with more DL days cumulatively than we had, but not in the bullpen specifically. And when you have all of your, or so many of your injuries concentrated in one area, I hate to say it's impossible to come back from, but it makes it really, really hard. And that's one of the realities we face. We weren't a perfect team outside of that. I'm not trying to say that, but for that, we would have been, you know, 105 win team. I don't think that's true, mm-hmm. but we definitely had a lot of challenges along the way. We had a lot of guys rise up to help us overcome that. And that's part of what gives us a lot of confidence in 2020. But, you know, we had a lot of challenges. And, you know, a lot of teams have challenges. And how you respond to those challenges ultimately defines, you know, whether you're playing October baseball or not.
Bullpen aside, do you regret trusting the young pitchers, the young starting pitchers would give the team a chance in 2019?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying before. Like, if I go back and look at the reasons we did that, you know, in trusting the younger guys, and thus not, you know, devoting a significant percentage of the payroll to acquisitions in that area, that's what allowed us to go get some of the other players that we did get, you know, Segura and Harper and Romuto and McCutcheon, et cetera, even Robertson, who didn't end up playing for us much. But, mm-hmm. you know, if we add to the rotation, you know, one or more of those guys that I just mentioned probably aren't here. So, you know, it's not always as simple as just, you know, you do this or you don't do it. There's a ripple effect to all those things. So, again, I think the thought process behind why we did what we did was sound, and frankly, I think it is sound, but realistically, when it doesn't work, nobody sure. wants to hear, oh, we thought the process was good, you know? So,
right.
So yeah, I think we need to look at that, and we need to adjust for it this winter.
So how many new starting pitchers does this team need?
You know, again, it's not, I wish it was just as simple as, you know, you need a starter and a this and a that. You know, it's about wins, and wins, there have been a lot of World Series winning teams, playoff caliber teams that have been constructed differently. You've got offensive oriented teams, you've got starting pitching dominant teams like the Nationals just rode that to a World Series. You had teams like Kansas City a few years ago that, you know, was kind of a speed and bullpen dominated team that they rode to a World Series. So there's really no one way to skin a cat. I do think that there is an opportunity for us, and this may be obvious, but to supplement in the rotation, because we've built a pretty solid core, we think, on the position player front. So I think it makes sense for us to look to pour some more resources and our time and attention into improving our run prevention, and that starts within the starting rotation.
No question. Phillies general manager Matt Klintak with us here. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on WIP. Matt, the press conference after the season, the first one, with yourself, John Middleton, and Andy McPhail, I think one of the big takeaways that many had was that it looked like the Phillies top brass, the three of you, it looked like we're not on the same page related to the Kapler firing, and expressed that in a public way, which was surprising and unusual to many of us. Can you understand how that perception concerned a lot of Phillies fans?
Let me say this. I don't know that I can speak for the perception among fans. I can tell you sort of what, you know, the way I felt about it. And this is not a secret. I think, you know, you guys know, and, you know, Phillies employees know, the fans know, the players know that I'm a big Gabe Kapler fan. I still am. And I'm rooting for him to hopefully get the Giants job and go on to great things. Having said that, I get it. I get when, you know, you have a team that, that doesn't perform up to expectations for 2 years in a row and has a couple of September collapses, particularly in a big market like Philadelphia, why that changes happen. So never once did I, disagree with John or Andy or anybody on that front, you know, but I also wanted to make sure that if we made a change that we understood, you know, that there's a lot of good walking out the door too. John went through his process, definitely appreciated that, and we've taken some steps to make sure that we capture as much of the good as we can, even in a time of transition. That's, again, part of the reason we retained most of our coaching staff coming back, because there's a lot of good on that staff. But also, again, it's a big market, and there are expectations, and we need to be better next year. And I said at the Girardi press conference, a couple of weeks ago, you know, different times in a team's competitive cycle call for, you know, different leadership styles. And I remember talking about the value that Pete McCannon brought to us, and it seems like forever ago now, but it really wasn't. It was just a few years ago that when we're going through the really painful, turbulent times of a rebuild, the early stages of a rebuild, you need somebody who can come in and be a calming influence, a voice of reason, bring credibility and positivity, and someone who's been through a lot in their game and can bring again that credibility to the job. And Pete did that. Plus his staff, they were really good. As the team then evolved into a much younger team, this was after Reese and Nola, J.P. Crawford, and Alfaro, and Nick Williams, and a bunch of Pavetta, Velasquez, a bunch of the younger guys started to come to the big leagues and establish themselves in starting roles. You know, what we're looking for was a slightly different voice and someone with a little bit, who's a little more attentive to the player development side of things. And that's when we ended up hiring Cap, who was coming straight out of a farm director role with the Dodgers, and was nothing if not attentive to the needs of young players. And that, you know, took us, we made a lot of advances in the last couple of years, not from 2018 to 19 in the win column. We only went up one win. That's ultimately a big reason why we made the change, but we made a lot of advances in a lot of other areas. Now it's, you know, now we've got the core of a championship team here. We still need to add to it, but it's time to take that next step. And that's where a guy like Joe Girardi comes in. And, you know, this is a guy who's won a World Series, been to the playoffs six times, has obviously achieved great success in a very difficult market in New York. So we think he's a great fit and for this next era of Phillies baseball. I think all of that's okay. Like, you can have different voices leading different periods of your competitiveness. And I think that's sort of the way this one's lining up.
How do you plan to improve the farm system?
I'm more bullish on the farm system than some. You know, one of the things we got to try to do if we can is to not forfeit draft picks, and that's hard when you're playing when you're fishing in the deep end of the free agent pond. But you know, we've lost our second round pick last year and our second and third the year before, and you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but like, that's where Scott Kingery comes from, that's where Spencer Howard comes from, that's where Connor Siebold comes from, that's where some good players come from. That's just in our organization, not even throughout the league. So we got to try to hang on to that as much as we can. And we keep making investments in those areas. We keep spending where we can. Obviously we're restricted on the amounts we can spend both internationally and in the draft, but we keep making investments in our, you know, scouting personnel, our coaching personnel, our technologies, to be as good as we can in terms of developing players. But it's natural that as a team evolves from a rebuilding club to a contending club, that your system is going to take a hit, because the guys that, you know, that were making our system a higher rank system a few years ago are now in the big leagues. Or if they're not in the big leagues with us, they've been traded, like a Sixto Sanchez or J.P. Crawford, for example, to help us be better. So it makes sense that, you know, the system ranking is going to back up, but we've got, you know, young players who, you know, let's say a Kingery, a Hazley, a Hoskins, a Nola, that have come through our system that are going to be here for, you know, in some cases, the better part of a decade based on the years of control in their contracts. that's the name of the game. And then others like, you know, JP or Alfaro or Sixto or Will Stewart that have been used to acquire players like Segura, like Real Muto, that's what farm systems are for. And yes, we need to create a continuous pipeline of players that both can feed our major league club but also be used in trades. And I feel like we're doing that. So I disagree with any sort of a assessment that our system is bad. We've got some really good players, and I go back to the July trade deadline. We had plenty of trade capital if we chose to use it. We opted to make a lot of smaller trades as opposed to fewer big trades. But that wasn't because we lacked the player talent to get it.
All right, so Matt, let's address that for a moment. Again, Matt Klintak with us here on the trade deadline. And so Andy MacPhail, of course, did the comment, if we do, we do. If we don't, we don't. A comment that I thought that he owned up to and very effectively handled in the postseason press conference. But contained within that comment when he said it was a concern, I think, for many Phillies fans, which is that in a division with two really strong teams, Atlanta and then Washington, who proved to be the club that won the World Series, the organization's mindset is not to embrace, for instance, a wild card path. And this could very well be the path again to get to the postseason, with Atlanta and Washington both looking strong again for 2020. So to the fans out there that say, wow, my team's afraid to go for it, whether it's, you know, the start of the season, the opportunity to get a free agent in May and June that's still available, or the trade deadline, my team's not going for it. What do you say to those fans that have that thought, that heard that comment?
Yeah, I mean, not in a confrontational way, but I would point them back to the investments made last offseason. And, you know, we're not afraid to go for it in a free agent sense by signing the largest free agent contract in the history of the sport with Bryce Harper. We're also not afraid to go for it in a trade sense by trading the young assets I mentioned earlier for JT Realmuto. So I would let Andy speak for himself, and he has. I don't want to try to get inside his head and speak for him, but I think what he was alluding to more was, you know, again, a lot of the injuries and just the realities of the way that our season was going, and what he felt as the likelihood of us, you know, A, reaching the postseason, but B, winning once we got there. I think that's what he was talking about. I don't think he was trying to express apathy, though I understand why it was perceived that way.
All right. Again, so, Matt Klintak with us here. Matt, let's get to some specific players. Rhys Hoskins, second half struggle. What happened? Does it concern you moving forward?
I wish it hadn't happened. I mean, it's something we saw with our own eyes, and we have to take strides to help him improve as best we can. I still point to the body of work. He still led the National League in walks. You know, the home run total was, you know, probably less than he would have hoped for, than we all would have hoped for, largely because of, you know, the second half, as you mentioned. I think we've seen now, Reese, you know, this was his second full season in the big leagues. It seems like he's been here forever, but, you know, he really hasn't. He's still learning. And, you know, sometimes when you get into a funk like he did, it's hard to get out of it. So that's what I think we need to work with him on, is making sure every player is going to go through slumps. Even the very best players in the league will go through slumps. We know that. It's about minimizing the length of those slumps. And, you know, if you can cut them off at a couple days or even a week versus letting it linger for, you know, a month or longer, you know, that'll have a huge effect on Reese's own numbers, but also the team. So we still have a ton of confidence in his, you know, his ability in the batter's box, his eye, his patience, his power, and beyond that, his work ethic and his leadership, that, you know, he will be the best version that he can be. And, you know, we chalk it up to, you know, bad stretch, bad couple months.
What is your plan for Odubel Herrera?
Yeah, right now, he just came off the restricted list, I think about a week or so ago, and, you know, he's back on the roster, and, you know, we play it out and we see how the roster evolves. The one reality that, you know, we all have to face, he has to face, is that in his absence for the better part of the summer, we had some guys really step up, namely Adam Haseley, mm-hmm. Who came up from the minor leagues and was, you know, pretty good for us in center field, and Roman Quinn, who I know is sort of constantly been set back by injuries, but when he was playing regularly, you know, for the brief time this summer, was dynamic. So, you know, it's a much more competitive landscape in center field right now. That's something we need to work through. But it's something that's on our mind, obviously. But you know, we're not going to be held back by it by any stretch. We need to move forward, and we've got candidates we think to take down the reps in center field, whether Odubel's a part of that or not.
Matt, Scott Kingery, is where he plays contingent on things besides Scott Kingery, or do you just say, I want Scott Kingery to play this position, and then he plays that position? What happens with him?
I think probably the answer to your first question is yes. I mean, I think a lot of it, he is so valuable, not only to a manager day in and day out in terms of, you know, writing out a lineup, but also to a front office and in how we go about an off season. And, you know, if you're looking, you know, to add a bat, for instance, you know, we don't have to look in just one position. We can look at, you know, a variety of different spots, knowing that Scott Kingery can, not even capably, but masterfully fill in defensively at just about anywhere. I don't think it's a stretch to say he's our best defensive second baseman, shortstop, third baseman, and center fielder, in any one of those spots. Now, he can't play all four of those every day, but I think it's reasonable to think that he's our best defender at any one of those spots. So, you know, for everybody's sake, we'd like to give him, you know, some degree of certainty that he will be in the lineup every day. We'd love to be able to tell him it'll be at, you know, position X or position Y. But I think the reality is, year in and year out, that may change. There might be some years where he's lining up as an everyday second baseman or shortstop, and then the next year it might be third base or it might be center field. And, you know, there have been – Trey Turner's had this happen to him with Washington, you know, where he's been shortstop, he's been a center fielder. You know, Ben Zobrist has been doing this throughout his career. There are a variety of others. I'm sure you guys know them. But, you know, it's a real value to the team, and Scotty has such a great attitude about it, and he's so gifted defensively. And he's getting better at the positions where he has less experience that, you know, we'll just have to see. But I think it's possible that he opens up, you know, 2020 for us, taking down everyday reps at a single position. I think that's certainly possible. It's also possible that he does that, and then as the season unfolds and injuries or performance fluctuations happen, that he shifts to a different position. We just don't know what that position is yet.
Matt, Arrieta and McCutchen, about 5 months to opening day. How's it trending? Do you expect them to be fully healthy and ready to go for opening day?
Yes, both guys. I you know, they're both making great progress. They're both hard workers, great healers. Had their surgeries, you know, before the end of the year, and their timelines put them ready for not just opening day, but for the first day of spring training.
Matt, what is your message for Phillies fans?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you for, you know, hanging with us throughout a rebuild. And there have certainly been ups and downs, and, you know, low moments and very high moments. Maybe, you know, the highest being last February with, you know, in just a couple weeks' time, trading for Realmuto and signing Harper. We spent a lot of time in first place, and then we've had some September collapses. So thank you for hanging with us. But, you know, we've got another, you know, what I hope will be a productive offseason ahead of us that'll give everybody a lot of optimism heading into 2020. We've got a great manager in place. We've got star power on the roster, and we're looking forward to a productive offseason and then a productive 2020 season.
Matt, appreciate your time today, carving out some time here in November to obviously address what was and what's up ahead. And certainly, you know, we wish you and the club the best of luck to, as you said, time to win. And that's what people are hoping for, and that's what we'd love to see. We wish you the best of luck on the journey.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
All right, Thanks, Matt. Again, Matt Klintak on the Swartz Colleton guest line. If you're injured at work, get justice. Call Swartz Colleton at 800-JUSTICE.
It's a good song.
Danny, it
really is. Very, very good song.
Danny, say it!
Say it! There you go. Well done. Well done.
Hey, Jenna Cameron, John Ritchie, 94 WIP. If you missed our news from yesterday, we have announced Turkey Bowl, third annual Turkey Bowl here on Thanksgiving Day. Coming up in just about 3 weeks or so right here on WIP, Penridge and Quakertown. We are headed to Penridge and Quakertown's game this Thanksgiving. and we'll be proud to do it. Third annual Turkey Bowl, a tradition that will continue for many years to come. And, of course, we'll be spreading it around to other schools and other neighborhoods and other games in the coming years, hopefully decades. But we'll be proud to be there this year, Thanksgiving Day. Congratulations to Penn Ridge and Quakertown. All right, let's go out on the Swartz-Culleton guest line. If you're injured at work, get justice. Call Swartz-Culleton at 800-JUSTICE. A lot to talk to them about with this bye week right now, taking stock of the Birds, and, of course, specifically what we saw versus the Chicago Bears. You can follow them on Twitter, at Shiel Kapati and Mr. Shiel Kapati. What's happening, Shiel?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Now, Shiel, do you do a self-assessment bye week? Like, do you self-scout yourself and your work?
I'm constantly, you know, looking in the mirror, scouting my flaws. That's a daily, you know, Jim Schwartz says there's no halftime adjustments. It's series to series. That's like me with my life every day.
Well done, Shiel. Well done. All right. Was it well done by the Eagles versus the Bears? We'll get into the future, but let's just rewind it for a moment here. The jump out lead and then the close, you know, obviously fourth quarter. Big picture sense, what did you make of the Eagles' performance a couple days ago?
Well, I thought the coaching staff actually did an excellent job in this game. You look at it offensively, they did a lot of smart things to really neutralize Khalil Mack, whether it was chipping him, whether it was sliding protections, whether it was moving the pocket for Carson Wentz. And they really didn't let Khalil Mack be a factor in that game. And Lane Johnson did a really good job on Mack one-on-one as well. I think big picture, what stands out is that just all the explosive plays with this offense, and I'm sure we'll get to the DeSean Jackson stuff, but all the explosive plays have to be schemed up. I mean, you are rarely seeing just a receiver running past a cornerback or a guy with the ball in his hands running for 20 yards. And so I thought Doug Peterson did a really good job of scheming up some plays, whether it was in the screen game or some other route concepts to beat man coverage to really help the players in this game.
Is it sustainable? You know, scheming guys open all the time. How bad are our wide receivers playing?
Is it sustainable to win a Super Bowl with this team? No, I don't think so. Is it sustainable to maybe win the NFC East? It's possible. The wide receivers are playing really, really poorly. I mean, if you look up all the statistics, they are near the bottom of the league in every category. A couple things, you know, a few things that stand out from this game specifically. One, Alshon Jeffrey, I mean, they had three third down drops. You know, that is just, two of them were unbelievable throws by Carson Wentz where he's getting crushed, he lets it go, and Alshon Jeffrey can't hang on to the football. That's obviously been an issue all season long. And then Nelson Aguilar, I mean, they had two downfield attempts to him, and this guy's looking for the flag before the ball has even arrived. I mean, if I'm the Eagles coaching staff, when the players get back from the bye week, I'm going into the wide receiver room and I'm saying, I don't care if you guys get three offensive pass interferences next week against the Patriots. I don't want to see you going down at the slightest bit of contact and asking for a flag. I mean, they built a wide receiving core based on physicality, toughness, size. This has been their philosophy. And then you watch them during the game, and they're playing like they're 5'10", 165 pounds. That really stood out to me.
Drives me nuts. So can we make up for the loss of DeSean?
No, I don't want to be, you know, blunt or a Debbie Downer about it, but no, you can't. And to me, you know, it is a real cop-out to say, well, you know, we thought they released that statement when Jackson was put on IR. It's a real cop-out to say, well, we thought he was going to be able to play, and, you know, this is why we are where we are. If your offense goes for maybe a top five unit to 15 to 20 because a 32-year-old wide receiver with an injury history gets injured, you know, that's on the front office and the roster construction. That's not on the player or anyone else. I think it's a poor excuse when you look at it and you went into the, you know, we went into last offseason knowing you needed more speed, more athleticism. You put all your eggs into one basket. You draft a wide receiver in the second round who doesn't have that speed and athleticism, and this is where you are, a very methodical offense that has to work hard for everything you get.
Shiel, they're clearly in scramble mode right now at the wide receiver position personnel-wise. If we can go back in the 10, 11, 12-month way-back machine, from your memory, what was Jordan Matthews last year when he was a Bird? What did he do well? What did he not do well? What do you think he would be if they sign him?
I think he was okay. I think what you would probably see is that Matt Collins would come off the field. Nelson Aguilar would play more on the outside, and Jordan Matthews would be in the slot. I mean, if you look at his numbers from last year, they weren't that bad. And I think one big thing that really stands out is you have to look at who the quarterback trusts, because it is so obvious yet. Mac Hollins isn't even getting a look on these plays. Nelson Agholor, he's got to have like 5 yards of separation to get a look. And I don't blame Carson Wentz because the guys haven't played well. But that has been sort of a thing with him over the years. And we know that he does trust Jordan Matthews to run his routes, to be in the right places. You know, he's been up and down with his hands a little bit. But if they were to, you know, there's no great answer right now. It's the bottom line. And so I would not have an issue at all if they went out and they said, all right, this is kind of the best we can do. And at least we know the quarterback trusts this guy and we'll throw him the football.
So other side of the ball, our defense excelled. You know, they had whatever it was, 9 yards at halftime. How much of that was good Eagles defense and how much of that was abysmal Bears offense?
I would definitely both. I mean, that was a horrendous offensive performance by the Bears. Really one of the worst we've seen by any team this season. Aside from Trubisky being all over the place, I think I counted at least 3 drops there in the first half. And then you have Allen Robinson on the left sideline, can't get to keep his feet in balance. So they helped you quite a bit. But I think up front, a couple of the things we've seen, one was Fletcher Cox. You know, that first series, he just wrecked that entire first series, and we've seen him really come on here, I think, the last 2 or 3 weeks. I think it was early in the season you guys were asking me, you know, how can this defense improve? And I didn't have my great analysis was that Fletcher Cox can play better. And
yeah.
I think that's kind of what we're seeing, and that's sort of what you're counting on a little bit there. So it was definitely a little bit of both.
How about the corners, Shiel? Darby and Mills, not too tested the last 2 weeks, but better play, I think, than they got from the other guys a few weeks back. What are you saying?
Yes, and I think what was really interesting about this scheme schematically is what Jim Schwartz did, and it's a package we haven't seen all year. I don't even know if we've seen it since he's been head coach, and this is a dime package with 6 defensive backs, but the fourth, you're playing with 4 cornerbacks and 2 safeties as opposed to 3 cornerbacks and 3 safeties, and so Jalen Mills was used differently in this game than I think he's been used at any time since he's joined the Eagles. He was lining up against Trent Burton, the tight end. He was lining up in the slot against, I think it was Taylor Gabriel. And so you moved Rasul Douglas to the outside when you went to that dime look on third and long, and you moved Mills inside. So you had Mills and Maddox inside, Douglas and Darby on the outside. And I think that's actually going to be a pretty good package for them, especially if you get Cravon LeBlanc back at some point. I think these corners are much better cover guys than whoever your third safety would be. So I think that's an interesting wrinkle to kind of keep an eye on in the weeks ahead.
Brandon Graham and Barnett, what are you saying?
I thought they were fine. I think Graham's played pretty well. I think he's up to 6 sacks. Derek Barnett, you know, the one play he didn't finish, but he came kind of on a loop and went around the 2 defensive linemen, rushed from the inside. It was really more of a schematic thing than anything else, but that led to the Josh Sweat sack. So I think overall the defensive line, those 2 guys, Fletcher Cox, have really played better in the last few games here.
What about our new addition? DN gets a half sack. I mean, they lined him up as the Will linebacker in a nickel, you know, set. But can you foresee him actually being productive?
Yeah, that sack was pretty interesting, actually. He was kind of like a joker, just lined up, standing up on the right side of the defensive line. And he looked, you know, it was, again, very small sample, but he looked explosive on the play. I mean,
he did.
He looped inside and got to the quarterback. So I like that. You know, it seemed like in this game, they Jim Schwartz felt like he had some more tools to work with, and he tried some different things, and they worked out pretty well. I mean, big picture, it's going to be real interesting the next 2 weeks because this sort of ball-control offense where you're scoring 22 points, I mean, I just don't see that being a recipe for success against teams like the Seahawks and Patriots coming in here. So I'm kind of interested to see how they come out in those games, what they change, or whether they say, all right, this is all we've got, and let's go with this formula.
Well, that's sort of what we're talking about today. You watch the whole league. How much better are the Patriots and Seahawks than the Bills and the Bears?
Oh, not even close. The Seahawks offense especially is rolling, and they're so difficult to defend. Tyler Lockett is playing as well as any wide receiver in the NFL. Of course, the DK Metcalf conversation, I'm sure you guys have been having, and then you have Russell Wilson on the second reaction play. So that's going to be a factor. The Patriots offense,
has not been great. You know, they're not talented at the wide receiver position. If you get to Tom Brady, we saw with the Ravens, he'll turn the football over a little bit, and they've had some offensive line issues. But then again, it's Tom Brady, and the last time you saw this guy, he threw for over 500 yards in the Super Bowl. So certainly not going to be easy matchups. And then on the other side of the ball, that Patriots defense, you're going to see a lot of man coverage. So what kind of concepts can you dial up to beat those defenses back?
Shield, great stuff, my man, as always, every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. Shield Kapadia, just top flight information. Shield, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
There
thanks,
he is again, Shield. At Shield Kapadia on Twitter. A great follow and just a sensational covering the Eagles and the entire NFL. 888-729-9494. Let's talk to the Sledgehammer, Mark in Collegeville. What's up, Sledge?
What's up, fellas? How are we today?
Good. Feeling good, Sledge.
Are you feeling good, Joe? I mean, how many games do we have left before we see you start rocking that caterpillar on your lip?
Man, it's really not good. I mean, it's not good.
Oh, Joe, what do you mean it's not good? It's awesome.
It is awesome, man.
I mean, just like Richie, I too have been scoping out mustache styles for you.
Yeah, but I mean, the mustache plus no West Wing for an entire year? Rough.
I know, Joe. Rough. It's so rough. How are you going to live? How are you going to live with no West Wing?
How will I go on? What's that song? Trying to sing. What's that song? Is that a Celine Dion song? I don't know. I can't remember. But anyway, somehow.
My heart will go on.
My heart will go on. My heart will go on. Yes. Well,
like, Joe, I can see you rocking the Hulk Hogan Fu Manchu.
Ooh. That would be pleasant.
I'd rather have that than the mustache. This is really going to be bad.
Well, then do the Fu Manchu.
I'll think about that. I mean,
you'd rather have it.
I thought you said I wasn't allowed to have it.
Well, just don't grow a goatee like you did last time. You were supposed to grow a mustache.
Well, if you're amending the rules, then
I'll you know what a Fu Manchu is. It's just extended the mustache a little bit. That doesn't mean grow your chin out too.
Yeah, I can look like the big thumper in Major League that Charlie Sheen strikes out at the end. That's
that not a Fu Manchu.
Well, I got to go
those
back
like
and look
mutton
at
mutton chops or something.
Hold on, I gotta look at it. I don't know. Right, Sledge, what do you
Fu Manchu is the Guy Fawkes thing. Look up Guy right, Fawkes.
Guy
that's a Fu Manchu.
Guy Fawkes. Is that how I say his name? How do I say it?
Fawkes.
All right. What do you got on the Eagles, Sledge?
Well, here's my thing. Everyone's been talking a lot about the whole Antonio Brown thing. Like, some are for it, some are against it. Here's my opinion about it. The people who are for it, they're only for it because of Antonio Brown, the player. The people against it are against Antonio Brown, the person. Like, me personally, if there was an opportunity to sign him, I would sign him just because based on his ability to play and his elite status as a receiver. Him as a person, yes, horrible person. He's done things that really you can't really forgive. But talent-wise, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, if he's suspended, it doesn't even matter what the talent is. Sledge, what do you got? Title with a number in it.
Title with a number. Well, the one guy took the one because I gave it to Seltzer as an example. But how about 42, the Jackie Robinson movie.
Great answer, Sledge. Yeah. Appreciate it, man. You know what Sledge just did, some people do from time to time, it always cracks me up? The phraseology, me personally. He's making, if someone makes a point, me personally. Yeah, as opposed to you as somebody else? Mm. No, me as John Ritchie. Me as Hulk Hogan. Mm. Of course me is me personally.
You as the Macho Man?
There it is. Joe to Cameron, John Ritchie, 888-729-9494. Hey, when you're hiring, you don't want to waste time. You just don't want to waste time in life. You want an efficient way to get to your short list of qualified candidates, and you want to do it fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. That's right, Indeed.com. Used by over 3 million businesses. Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, make sure you accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free at Indeed.com/radio. That's Indeed.com/radio. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. Cheddar Cameron, John Rich, it is 94 WIP on a, it's still Football Friday, just non-Eagles edition. Get to sit back, watch some games this weekend and see how things go and, I don't know, do something different if you want to. All right, WIP, of course, every Friday at this time we play a little game called Beat the Hammer. We've got a $500 gift card to Cozy Jewelers on the line today, either for our contestant or, of course, for everyone else to have a shot to win if I win, which I expect to do. Cozy Jewelers, the 5th C in diamonds, color, cut, clarity, excuse me, color, Cuts, Clarity, Carrot, and Cozy. Cozy located at 4819 Westchester Pike in Newtown Square. And, of course, you can visit them online at CozyJewelers.com. Let's play a little game called Beat the Hammer. I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to congratulate myself in advance of my victory.
Oh, brother.
All right, this is Babe Ruth calling a shot. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I'm telling you right now, I'm calling my shot. With that said, let's go out right now and talk to Jeff in Clifton Heights. Jeff, the shot's been called, and you're the chump pitcher facing Babe.
You're going to be feeling like Babe at the end of his career there, Ham.
Love it. Bring it, Jeff.
You're telling me this is the Boston Braves, Babe? Is that who he was with, James? The Boston Braves?
Correct.
That was a sad, sad state with Babe Ruth playing for a team other than the Yankees. What are you going to do? All right, Jeff, you know your sports, it sounds like. Sounds like you got some smack talk in your arsenal.
I do. We'll see what the category is.
All right.
Are you rethinking that call on your shot,
Uh-oh.
Joe?
Not really. No pink. All right, Jeff, I'm going to step into the soundproof booth. Good luck to you, pal.
All right.
You're allowed to say good luck to you, too, Hammer. You can be polite,
no,
you know.
You're not.
All right.
You should have took a bye week this week, Hammer.
Oh,
look at that.
All right, I'm out of here.
Bringing it back to sports again.
I love this. This is good work.
Yeah.
Jeff's ready. Feel confident.
Savvy.
This is good stuff. It's the Hammer saunters out of the studio. Definitely a little pink. I don't care what he says. A little pink.
I agree.
Jeff, he's a little pink. So
the level of pinkness increased drastically just now.
Yeah. Well, Jeff sounds confident. I like this. Jeff.
50 seconds, Jeff.
Yeah.
You ready to play Beat the Hammer?
I'm ready.
All right. As you know, the clock will start as soon as the first question is done being asked. Our category for today. Eagles are off, but the NFL still happens. NFL trivia today.
Let's do it.
Jeff. All right, beautiful. Again, the clock will start as soon as the first question is asked. Disclaimer, I'm only talking about the regular season. If it's playoffs, I will specify playoffs. That is more for Joe than for you. All right, here we go. Jeff, you ready to roll?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Question number one. This active player is the NFL's all-time leader in career passing yards. Name him.
Larry Fitzgerald?
Only two receivers have had over 20 receiving touchdowns in a single season. Name them.
Could you repeat that?
Only two receivers have had over 20 receiving touchdowns in a single season. Name them.
Jerry Rice and Calvin Johnson.
Frank Gore is one of two active NFL players with over 13,000 career rushing yards. Name the other.
Adrian Peterson.
The NFL has had only three commissioners since 1960. Name them.
Goodell. Pass.
Two active NFL players have over 1,100 career receptions. Name one of the... All right, we got one. We got one.
Tough.
Yeah, they're tough, Jeff. It's tough when you get on the air, I'll tell you, man. It's harder than people think. But we'll put you on hold, Jeff. There's a real chance here. You never know, Joe. He had a zero a couple weeks ago in the regular time. So
I'm not feeling good about the zero this time
around. We'll see as he hopefully saunters back in the studio soon here.
What's he doing out there?
I don't know. I can't see him. There we go. Turtle, will you get him for me? There we go. Turtle's like motioning in this hallway there. All right, he's finally back. Nice to show up.
He's looking...
You gotta say this.
He's looking extremely out of sorts right now.
I will just say this one
comment.
What happened
to you out there?
One thing about calling your shot, it kind of makes you a little bit more nervous.
Ah!
I'm not gonna lie.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, why'd you do it?
I don't know.
Now,
I'm starting to regret it.
Uh-huh.
All
well,
right.
You should.
How did this, what's this guy's name, Jeff?
Wow, I just saw the like a bloom
so
of red.
It's so rare that he'll actually admit that,
I
too.
Know.
This is, this is good.
What are you going to do?
Totally flushed right now.
This Jeff in Clifton Heights, how did this this Jeff guy do?
How do you do, guys? How'd he do?
How'd he do, guys?
You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Category this week, the... Eagles might be off, but the NFL isn't. We're doing a little...
45 seconds.
50 seconds. What's the category?
NFL trivia this week.
Just general NFL.
General NFL.
Not any regular season, postseason
that's
things?
That's what I was about to say. Disclaimer, regular season only. I will specify if it is playoffs.
Okay. And remember, there are other things that NFL can mean besides just NFL football.
Not for long. No fun league.
Right.
Yeah.
The acronym has many applications.
Now, does the AFL factor into this? Do AFL records count? Oh, James doesn't know how to answer that. Let's go.
This is a ridiculous question. You ready?
All right.
It really was.
I don't know. Do they count? Do they not count? I don't know. All right,
question number what? This active player is the NFL's all-time leader in career passing yards. Name him.
Drew Brees.
Only two receivers have had over 20 receiving touchdowns in a single season. Name them.
Jerry Rice, Randy Moss.
Frank Gore is one of two active NFL players with over 13,000 career rushing yards. Name the other.
Pass.
The NFL has had only three commissioners since 1960. Name them.
Three, you said, since 60? Mm-hmm. Roselle, Tagliabue, Goodell.
Two active NFL players have over 1,100 career receptions. Name one of them.
Say again?
Two active NFL players have over 1,100 career receptions. Name one of them.
1,100 career catches. Larry Fitzgerald. And rushing yards over 13 other than Frank Gore. Man. What, I got all day here? What's going on?
Pretty funny. That was the only one that Jeff got. Wow. And you got the other four. Adrian Peterson, the correct answer on that one. And the other receiver or active NFL player with over 1,100 career receptions, Jason Witten.
Listen. 107, baby. 107. That's how you do it! Yeah! Wow! settle down. Settle down. That's not appropriate. All right, let's welcome Jeff. Jeff, you lost.
I did, Joe. Very humble about it. I get it. Stumbled there in the beginning, but you had me. Tough category.
I had you at hello, Jeff.
Oh, man.
You complete me.
Oh,
show me the money. The three legendary lines from Jerry Maguire.
Who's coming with me?
Who's coming with me? Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for playing Beat the Hammer today and listening to the show, man. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right,
take care,
man. Appreciate it, man. Thanks, Jeff. Let's contest line right now. We'll take the third caller in the contest line. Third caller is going to win the $500 Cozy Jewelers gift card at 215-625-6681. Everyone's got a shot. Caller number three. Let's shut that music down. That's how we do. That's what we do. And that's how we do. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Billy T in Princeton. Billy T.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, buddy.
Listen,
Billy T, we'd be able to listen better if we could hear you. You're like, what are you in? What are you in, Mars? What are you on the moon? Where are you? Are you in the John? What's going on back there?
Okay, how's that? Better?
That's better. Still a little ruffled, but that's all right. Here we go.
Well, listen, I got a comment about Joe Girardi, the Phillies. And I got to say, you're going to see these pitchers kind of strike zone low. And I think Cole Hamels coming here will be a tremendous help to the Phillies. You'll have Jake and him in the middle of the order. Jake's going to come back strong.
He's got to be a lot better, man. I got to say, a lot better.
Well, I think he will be. And I got a comment about our quarterback. Will everybody lay off poor Carson Wentz? I mean, the guy's playing fine. And, he just needs to learn to throw the deep ball, put some air under it, and lead to the inside, whichever side of the field it is, for the receiver so they get a little separation. That's it. I mean, the kid's playing great. And I don't understand why these people are hating on Carson Wentz.
Well, Joe?
Well, I don't think it's hate. I don't think it's hate to have, I'll call it critical analysis.
John, what do you think about that?
I think a lot of it stems from people want to, they loved Nick Foles so much that they can't love another. I really do believe that's part of it.
John, I love Nick Foles. He knew how to throw deep ball. They're different players. They have different attributes. You know, very seriously, though, he just needs to put some air under a football so that the receiver can run under it. And I mean, Christ, it's really simple. I don't understand why Doug Peterson, who was a quarterback, isn't teaching him that.
Well, I mean, what are we talking about? Really? Like, he's got no – they're not even trying to push the ball downfield to these guys at this point. I wouldn't, if I'm Doug Peterson, call plays that are, you know, play action, slow developing, it, if I'm if my only target is going to be Nelson Agholor downfield. Like, I think we need to scrap that idea because he's more concerned about drawing a PI than he is about going and getting the ball.
All right, Billy, let's see what he got here. Someone or something that's underrated.
Motherhood.
Okay. I mean, pretty big deal. We got a day for it. We know civilization ends without it. I mean, do we really underrate it? I mean, no offense to the mothers. I admire you. I don't think we underrate it. I think we cherish it. I mean, that's just me, but, you know.
I cherish my mom.
Yeah. I do, too.
Motherhood.
So I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Just saying something important doesn't mean it's underrated. I think, I mean, it's got a whole day. It's called Mother's Day. There's only 365 of them a year. One of them's that one. What, do we need 7 Mother's Day? I mean, is that where we're at as a society? We need 7 Mother's Day? Maybe we should.
I don't know. I think fathers are pretty underrated. So.
All right, 888-729-9494. Just about the halfway point of the season. 9 games in, Eagles bye week. What are their playoff probabilities? We know entering Sunday with the bye week, they're a half a game behind the Dallas Cowboys. What do the mathematicians say as far as playoff probability for the Eagles, for the division, for the wild card, to make the playoffs? We'll roll out those numbers to you next. Joe DiCamera, John Ritchie on WIP.
Joe DiCamera and John Ritchie. Middays, 10 a.m. till 2 on Sports Radio 94 WIP.